It is 21 degrees right now in the Twin Cities at 6:07. Great to be with you on this Saturday, along with producer Jonathan Lowe. Jonathan, how are you doing here in this chilly weather that we've all been experiencing for the past 3 weeks?
The only thing that I can say is that it's moderated. It hasn't warmed. I can't even say it's warmed up. It's moderated, which is a step up from where we used to be, which was at the back end of the freezer.
It's got to come. It's got to be coming, a warming trend. But it's nowhere in sight.
I'm not expecting it. I'm not expecting it until after Memorial Day.
I'm
being half facetious, half not, because the way that this area works sometimes, it might be till mid-May until you actually experience spring.
Well, yes, I do remember, and you were here, I do remember slogging over here last April after I made the decision, actually TV made the decision for me to spend the night in a hotel. Excuse me. And so I spent the night in a hotel, checked in, walked over here from basically WCCO-TV, which is only a few blocks away. And I felt like I was a polar Arctic explorer snow just driving at me. And
you needed drifts a dog sled.
You needed a dog sled. This is the night of the big blizzard, folks, which was a Saturday evening, I remember.
And this isn't the first time this has happened since I've been working here. There have been other April snowstorms. It snowed in early May.
Right.
Since
and,
I've lived in this area.
But that one was a doozy.
There have been a couple other ones that were really big. For some people, they love it. They thrive off of it. They can't get enough of it. For me, I apologize to those people. I am not with you.
I am not
from your same mold.
I don't mind the snow. It's just, did we have to get it all in the same three-week period? Or could it have not have been spread out a little bit more over the past few months?
Here's my position on snow, just overall. Snow is pretty for 12 hours. It has a 12-hour limit. Once it gets past 12 hours, it just becomes a wreck.
I don't know about that. It is beautiful, and I know an awful lot of people. I was driving here, and I saw a bunch of kids sledding, and they look so happy, and there's so many great things you can do for the snowmobilers and the skiers.
12 hours. Yes, I am the snow Grinch.
Okay. Well, listen, we have got a great show lined up for tonight. This hour, we are going to talk about a couple of issues that are before the Minnesota State Legislature. And actually, I think that there are a lot of things that could get done in this legislative session. One of them that I do think is going to get done is some form of distracted driving bill. I think in this legislature, you're going to see something come out that will prevent people from talking on their cell phones while driving. And my first guest coming up lost his daughter a number of years ago, and he has really been crusading for this for a long time. I think this is the year he might see it. We'll talk to them, and then we'll talk to Senator Patricia Torres-Ray. She, of course, is a veteran state legislator, and she had a news conference with several other legislators to talk about the fact that there are so few teachers of color. And what kind of precedent does that set? What kind of inspiration does that provide for those children of color who are sitting in a classroom and they're not seeing teachers that look like them? And then we're going to talk in the 7 o'clock hour. What does it take to be or to own a championship dog? I mean, what does it take to get you to Westminster? Is it just a great dog, or is it obviously you've got to have the breeding, but do you have to like know how to run around that rink in a little suit and do it perfectly? I think you probably need some of that. And then the 8 o'clock hour, we are going to talk with David Schultz. We're going to break down the Klobuchar announcement. I was actually at that announcement last Sunday. She kicked off her campaign in Eau Claire. So we'll talk to him about her race and also what he expects out of the Minnesota State Legislature. I do want to let you know that 10:30 a.m. WCCO-TV tomorrow, my guests will be Governor and First Lady Mrs. Tim Walz, Gwen Walz, who is the first First Lady that the state has had for a number of years. Obviously, Governor Dayton was not married, and First Lady Gwen Walz has a number of agenda items that she really is advocating for. So I think it's going to be really cool. So please tune in 10:30 a.m. And of course, Mike Augustinak will have your updated weather forecast. But let's take a quick break. When we come back, We will be joined by Vijay Dixit. He is the chairman of the Shreya Dixit Memorial Foundation, and he is a longtime advocate for a crackdown on laws that he says allow too much distracted driving here in Minnesota. It is 6:15 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock, along with producer Jonathan Lowe. This legislative session, there is expected to be some form of distracted driving legislation that will be passed. In other words, some form of law that basically says you can't drive while you're on your cell phone. No one has worked harder on some kind of legislation like this than Vijay Dixit, who lost his own daughter back in 2007, his daughter Shreya, who was only 19 years old, in a distracted driving case. And I have interviewed him many times. Vijay Dixit, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much, Esme. It's such a pleasure to speak with you again.
All right. Absolutely, and a pleasure to speak with you, sir, as well. I do believe, from what I'm hearing at the legislature, that this is going to be the year that something gets passed. That's my analysis. You've been in the trenches. You've been fighting for this every single year at the legislature. What do you think? Do you think this is the year something is going to get passed?
Well, we are cautiously optimistic. Yes, this seems to be the year it will pass, and I'm using the word will, but there's still some committee meetings that are supposed to be finished. One is on this coming Tuesday. And hopefully, according to estimates, 1st of March is the day that it will go to the governor's desk.
Oh, which day in March?
1st of March.
1st of March.
I have heard.
Wow. Okay. Well, you're very plugged in there. I will say one of the questions, though, has been, what should the penalties be? Can you touch it once to reset it? It sounds as if there's going to be a bill that says you can't drive while on your cell phone, or you can't be using it in your hand as a navigation device. It's got to be mounted on the dashboard. Is that your understanding of what is most likely to pass?
That is correct. So actually, there are two bills, and you're absolutely right. There is a hands-free bill, which actually was introduced last year also, and now with the modification that's reintroduced this year and has very good potential to good prospects to pass. In addition to that, there's a parallel bill in the legislature. It's the penalty bill, which is separate from this one. But I believe it's the hands-free bill. If that passes, then penalty bill can follow. But, you know, that we need to look at both of them. But I believe, this is my personal belief and a lot of other advocates as well as educators, they say that it's better to have a law first in place before you put in penalties.
Right. And it's the penalty one, that second bill, that's more controversial and that's prompting a lot of debate. I mean, the proposals range anywhere from after, you know, several repeated offenses or somebody gets hurt. I think if somebody gets hurt, potentially looking at felony charges, but or maybe not. And I think that's one of the problems. But there are some legislators who don't want to make it a felony. There are other legislators who are talking about if you have a third offense, you lose your phone, which I think would be difficult to enforce. What are your thoughts about the penalty phase here?
I think, again, I'll come back to the same point that penalties need to be looked at. But I think it's important for us to have a law in place first.
Okay.
How can you do penalties when you cannot even enforce the law?
Right.
And the hands-free bill that is right now being discussed actually allows the law enforcement as well as people who are actually violating the law to be caught red-handed. Right now, we do have a texting law, as you know, Esme.
Right. You can't text and drive in Minnesota. You should not.
That is right. However, it's very difficult. It's challenging for the troopers to catch a person in action because they have to catch the person. Yes, you were texting, He said, no, I was on the telephone. How do you do that? But if we get that telephone out of the hands of the drivers, put it on a harness, the moment a driver touches the telephone, maybe you know that he has violated the law. But if the person is holding a telephone in his or her hand, she or he have violated the law. So you can catch them. Enforcement becomes better. And at the same time, when you know that we are easily going to be tracked, I think that Hawthorne effect, where what we are talking about, if people are watching you, then you are careful. And we have seen it
right.
15, 16 other states, Esme. And we are not the leader in this field. There are 17 states already with hands-free law, and they are, on an average, saving 15 to 20% of lives every year.
We're chatting with Vijay Dixit. He's the chairman of the Shreya Dixit Memorial Foundation. His daughter, Shreya, was killed in a distracted driving incident back in 2007. And Vijay Dixit has been fighting, as I said, for years now for some kind of law. You're absolutely right. I actually talked with Colonel Matt Langer, who's the head of the State Patrol. And he said the problem that the state troopers are having, and they're doing the job to try and keep all of us safe out there on the highways and the roads, is that they pull somebody over and they say, I saw you on your phone with the thumbs moving, and the person will be, no, I was just talking on the phone, which of course is legal. Or, oh, I wasn't texting, I was just using it as a navigation device to get to grandma's house. And that's the difficulty, is the threshold for explaining, what you're doing is so high. One version of the law, though, that the first bill I heard was that you could touch it to reset it. I don't know if that's still in the law or not.
Yeah, I think that is in the works, and hopefully there will be some resolutions on that. Yes, you can touch it, and you can use the GPS on it.
Okay.
But even on the GPS, whenever you have your eyes away from the road, you are risky.
Right.
Risking your life.
Right.
So,
go
ahead.
No, I actually am in the process of looking at some cars, and some of these newer cars, there's so much going on in the dashboard. I don't see how you can't. It's to me, it almost is distracting in and of itself. But I wonder. And let me ask you this: when is this supposed to go into effect? Because I know a lot of laws, new laws, if it does get passed, which I think it is going to get passed, some form of it. You think it's going to get passed? You're even more plugged in than I am on this. And I'm pretty plugged in. Do you think it could be passed, go into effect as soon as August?
Yes, that is what our goal
August
is.
August 1st.
And if it passes this session, the governor has already promised to sign it. And there is very good amount of bipartisan support in both House and the Senate.
Absolutely. And and the Republicans are on board. There were a number of very prominent Republicans who had questions about this. They're on board in the Senate. You've got people like – if you have somebody like Senator Paul Gazelka, who's the majority leader of the Senate, on board, I don't see how it's not going to pass. And you've got also the Democratic legislators. They control the House. It does seem like it's going to pass, and it does seem like the only question is on the penalty side. But the data that you've been talking about is something that is so important and that there really has resulted in – deaths going down in other states. And I have to say, it just, when we cover one of these news conferences, and people like yourself tell this story, your story, and then, somebody else gets up and tells a story, it's just devastating.
It is. But I think now we are telling those stories with data.
Right.
And stories alone do not work. Yeah, we can emotionally influence them, but a lot of the legislatures, they want data. And now we have data on 17 states and one district of Columbia. All of them more than 15, 16, 20%, even 2 years after the law has gone into effect. Take, for instance, even in this state, if we use a lower lower estimate, which is 15% of all the crashes are because of distracted driving or cell phone use, we will be saving 55 lives next year. And if we keep fighting about this and not making a decision, by next year at this time, we will have lost another 55 lives.
Wow.
And that's unacceptable.
Absolutely.
That's not a choice we should have.
Right. It is something that I think is long overdue, and I think it is something that, again, that, as you said, it has broad bipartisan support. And I think it's something that I think if it doesn't happen this year, it's going to happen. But why not do it this year and take that step?
Why not? And things are not getting any better. Take for instance, I just, before I went to the show, I looked up at the DPS, Office of Traffic Safety site, 38 people have been already killed in the year 2019.
Wow.
Last year, at this time, we had lost 28. Things are not getting any better.
All right. Well,
I
listen.
Think this is a no-brainer. This is a no-brainer.
And you mentioned a hearing on Tuesday at the Capitol on this. Is that for the House or the Senate? Do you know?
That is for the House bill. That's for the House bill. And Senate bill was heard a couple of weeks ago, and it passed through that.
Right.
And so we're making good progress.
You're making good progress. Well, listen, Vijay Tixit, you've been at this, tragically for a long time and really advocating. You were one of the first people that really, was waving the flag here in Minnesota and saying we need to do something. And I certainly hope that this is the year you get that law.
Thank you so much, Esme, for inviting me and talking to your listeners.
Absolutely. Well, and I'm sure we'll see you at the Capitol. I'm spending some more time down there, so I'm sure I'll be covering some of these hearings, and as the governor's on board, so it looks like something is, in fact, going to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Sure. All the best.
Yes. So I do think, folks, that by August 1st, I think we're going to have this in Minnesota. And the version that I'm hearing that has the biggest chance of passing is one that would require you, if you have, an older car like I do right now, is that you'd have to have some kind of a mount on your dashboard to hold the phone so it wouldn't be in your hand. And I guess you could talk on your phone, but it would have to be hands-free. That's my understanding. That might change, and there might be differences between the House bill and the Senate bill, but it just couldn't be physically in your hand, so you couldn't look down. And again, what the state troopers are saying is that they are having a very difficult time enforcing what the obvious law that we have in place already, no texting and driving, because every time they finally pull somebody over, the person goes, no, I was just looking at my GPS. I wasn't texting or whatever. So, and I think that's something that really, I think all of us agree is not something that we want to have. We want to have enforcement of that, and we want the state troopers to be able to do their jobs and enforce these laws, and the laws need to be a little tougher there. All right. Well, coming up in our next half hour, we are going to be visited by Senator Patricia Torres-Ray. Only 4.3% of all teachers are teachers of color, while 33.5% of Minnesota students are of color or American Indian. The Increase Teachers of Color Act is co-sponsored by Senator Torres, and it aims to increase diversity amongst teachers here and to attract new teachers. And teachers of color is something that I think a lot of people in communities in the Twin Cities and across the state of Minnesota think it would be a very, very good idea. So we're going to talk to her. Keep it here, folks. You are listening to News Radio 830 WCCO. 35 in the Twin Cities. Hope you were having a great Saturday evening. Want to invite you to tune in to WCCO TV Sunday morning, 6 a.m., 10:30 a.m. Special guests, Governor and First Lady of Minnesota will be with us, both Governor Tim Walz and his wife, Gwen Walz, the First Lady Minnesota has had in a number of years, will both be live guests. So that should be a lot of fun. Well, one proposal that was made for a piece of legislation at the legislature this past week is a bill that's called the Increase Teachers of Color Act. Right now, only 4.3% of all teachers are teachers of color, while, listen to this, 33.5% of Minnesota students are of color or Native American. Senator Patricia Torres-Ray is the sponsor or co-sponsor of the bill, and she is joining us right now. Senator Torres-Ray, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted. Thank you for inviting me to connect with your audience.
Well, absolutely. Why don't you tell us, and you had a big group there, you know, announcing this. Tell us about what you have found and what your bill would like to do. And what are some of the things that if you could wave your magic wand and get this act through and get some other provisions passed, what would you like to see?
Well, you know, the reason you saw a large group with us during our press conference last week is because this is the result of 3 years of work and the work of a coalition that involved about 1,200 people who participated in putting together the recommendations that are included in this piece of legislation. So it's a very comprehensive approach, and what this group helped us do was to really travel around the state of Minnesota and hear from teachers in rural Minnesota, administrators from, you know, suburban communities, urban core. So they connected with a large audience geographically and also with institutions that are involved in education. And what they heard is that we really are in a crisis, that we need more teachers. Young people are not pursuing the teaching profession. And we just need to do more in general to recruit teachers, but we have a particular problem with recruiting and retaining teachers of color.
Right.
So what the bill wants to do is respond to this critical need that we have in Minnesota today. You just mentioned the numbers, only 2,740 teachers in the state of Minnesota. I mean, that's just a very, very small number of teachers that today are in the classroom. And what the bill really tries to do is really put a number of initiatives in there to provide incentives for young people to pursue the teaching profession, to ensure that we have funding for schools that train our teachers, that we provide incentives for paying tuition. And we also maintain the funding for programs that are in place right now, like the American Indian Teacher Preparation Program, the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color Grant. And so it has a number of tools inserted in the bill. And what we were told is that very definitely we need to do all of it in order to really have an impact.
All right. Let me ask you, and something you said there is that in general, what you're finding is that young people are not attracted to the teaching profession. And you've got especially this problem with people of color. But overall, young people are not being attracted to the teaching profession. Is there any reason why?
You know, I think that I talk a lot with teachers. You know, I have served in the Education Committee for 12 years now, since I started in the Senate. And I think what I hear, you know, the teaching is hard.
It is absolutely hard, yes.
You know, we have teachers that are not able to go to the bathroom. They don't have time to go to the bathroom. They'll have a break. It's a difficult profession. You know, with the market as it is, there is a lot, you know, that young people can pursue. We have a good economy right now, lots of jobs open to them. Millennials, young people like to travel to pursue jobs in different parts of the world. And it's a profession that really doesn't pay well. And another thing that we also find is that many times, you know, young people do pursue the profession and stay, but in Minnesota, we don't have a system of induction for teachers. So we don't have a system that provides kind of a mentorship program and support system when they enter the profession. So they are on their own learning. And, you know, these are very difficult years. We lose a lot of teachers. You know, the report that we just received from the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board indicate that we have about I think it's 52% of teachers that have a teaching license right now, but they are not working as teachers in the classroom.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You know, and I wonder, you know, for young people also, if, you know, I think it's well known that teachers don't get paid enough. I mean, the schedule for some people is great because you do have that more time off. That's the one benefit they do have. But I think there are so many of these young people, obviously, who are of color and also who are Caucasian, who are coming out of colleges and coming out of getting these degrees, and they have so much debt. I wonder if they're looking at the end saying, well, if I work for 20 or 30 years as a teacher, I'm still not going to be making, you know, a lot of money, and I'm still going to be dealing with these debts. I mean, do you think that might be a factor?
Absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. And we see that in general, you know, these kids, these young people really are understanding that when they get out of college, they're going to have this debt that impedes, you know, for them to really save for money to buy a house, even to buy a car, because they just have to pay incredible amounts of money. And so the bill, actually, a chunk of this money, almost $26 million that I'm asking for, that we are asking for, is actually for scholarships. Because we are absolutely convinced that without that incentive, it's going to be very difficult, really, for us to provide the incentives that are necessary for, you know, to attract people in general. And, you know, we have significant problems that are kind of different problems depending on what geographic area you look at. For instance, in rural Minnesota, we have a significant problem in general with teachers. We're not recruiting and retaining. And then in urban core, I think there are some areas where we are not able to recruit teachers, you know, for STEM, science, world languages. We're not able to recruit teachers with that type of license. So depending on the area that you look at, they struggle with kind of different situations, but in general, they're just not able to recruit. And then, you know, in Minneapolis, we had a report where Minneapolis has tried very, very hard to recruit nationwide, and they have hired people of color. They have hired teachers of color and native teachers, but they have not been able to retain them. So it's a big problem. And we don't have good statistics about retention. We have some districts, and we have some anecdotal data, so we need to do a better job of really trying to figure out why they are leaving.
Right. And obviously Minnesota does have a very, very low unemployment rate, and that's probably contributing it to it as well. We are chatting with Senator Patricia Torres-Ray. She has been in the state legislature since 2007, right?
Yes,
2007. You're on the Education Finance Committee, among a number of other committees. You had a large group of people with you. What are you hearing about the chances of this bill and the chances of getting this $26 million in scholarship money to help promote, you know, and attract hiring and retention of teachers of color?
I hear very good things. We have heard from a number of districts, a number of organizations, school districts, I mean, name it. We've received very good feedback on the bill itself, the effort that we're pursuing. The House is excited about it. Representative Dabney is a co-author in the House. He's the chair of finance. The governor is very, very supportive of this. He, you know, as you know, they both are teachers.
Yeah, both the governor and Mrs. Walls are teachers.
They are teachers, and so they care very deeply about this issue. I still have to convince my colleagues in the majority in the Senate. I think that Senator Nelson has been supportive of this issue. We are in conversations about getting a hearing for the bill. I think that the challenge that I face, and this has been the case for the last 12 years for me, is that we are being just too timid. We are not putting enough emphasis on this issue, and I think that that has been the main problem. You know, imagine we have about 3.5 million right now invested on efforts for recruitment training of teachers of color in general, for all the programs that exist in the different universities. So it's so insufficient, and we tend to do these you know, very small allocation, kind of pilot projects here and there, very small money, and it's just not working. So we are at a point where we are in a critical need, and we are going to have to really do a much more aggressive approach, and that's what we're asking for.
You know, I don't think anybody is going to say that a Caucasian teacher can't, you know, teach and be a great teacher for children of color. But in your view, what does it mean? What is the extra boost, even if it's subliminal, to have a teacher that looks like you teaching you?
You know, the research is very compelling. This is a question that we have asked ourselves for many, many, many years, almost 25 years of research into does it make a difference to have a teacher of color in the classroom? And the research is very clear. It does. And what the research is telling us right now is not just for children of color and indigenous children to see themselves in their teachers and to be able to relate to their teachers, to be able to speak the same language, to be able to talk about their faith. There are so many things that children need to see in their teacher, and be able to connect is a really important thing. But what we're seeing in Minnesota is that there are many white children who really don't have opportunities to connect with people of color. And they are not able, they don't have teachers of color in their entire experience in the classroom. They never see a teacher of color. We have testimonies of teachers of children of color who really notice that. But now white children are saying, you know, I never had a teacher of color in my life. And when they go to college, when they want to explore the world, they realize that they didn't have that opportunity, that they were not exposed and they were not. They didn't have that opportunity, you know,
That's a fascinating point. It's something I would never have even thought of, that they're missing out, understanding that these people, anybody of whatever color, can be a leader and a teacher, and they're not getting that. And in a community and in an age when we're all trying to embrace diversity and accept our diversity and embrace it and celebrate it, I think that's really just a problem. Let me ask you, is Minnesota worse? I know that we have one of the worst achievement gaps, and we still do. Is in terms of like retaining teachers of color, or the percentage of teachers of color, do we have fewer than other states?
We do. We do. Our number is very small, and actually that's a very good question. I'm trying to really look at, you know, the demographics of our state are quite interesting. When you look at, for instance, the number of Native American people that we have in the state of Minnesota, and you realize that we have, you know, 11 tribes that are incredibly important, powerful, culturally important in our community, and that we have only, you know, 1% of Native American teachers. It's just unbelievable that that we accept that. Sorry, it's 0.1. It's not one.
It's 0.1. even on the reservations, the tribal lands.
Well, you know, we separate the Native Hawaiian. So we separate Alaska Native, and we separate. So it's kind of complicated, but. But in total, it's just a little bit over 1% in total for Native, for teachers of,
or 0.1%.
Of Native descent.
Mm-hmm. Wow, okay.
And so you really look at, in looking at the numbers, for instance, of our Native population and how we value this culture and how important it is historically and foundationally for the state of Minnesota, for us not to have teachers, for us to have, you know, vast numbers of districts and children that will never have a Native teacher in their life. It's incredibly profound. So it's not just the number, it's the significance of what we are doing in Minnesota. And so, you know, demographically, we really have to look into that, how segregated this state is. We have suburban communities that are incredibly becoming more and more diverse, and they have no teachers of color. So that's, I think, the significance of this review right now, that we really have a student population that is becoming more and more diverse all over the state of Minnesota, which is not doing enough.
Right.
So it's a problem.
All right. Well, listen, Senator Torres Rae, I know that that's what your bill is hoping to address. And we certainly appreciate your time this evening, really going in depth into this important issue for us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Senator Torres Rae. A fascinating discussion there about the implications, not just for students of color, but also students that are Caucasian, of not having these role models, these teachers of color in our communities. And I do wonder, I do think it's fascinating, though, what Senator Torres Rae was talking about, in that she was talking about the fact that young people of all colors really aren't being attracted to the teaching profession. And that's really a sad thing. And you have to wonder if it's this student debt that you know, kids are looking at, what is the end result? What could I be making if I stick with this profession in 34 years? And they're thinking maybe that's not enough to pay all the student loans. And that's why you've got so many people who have teaching licenses who aren't teaching. Anyway, Senator Patricia Torres Rae. There are a lot of really interesting bills at the Capitol. It'll be interesting to see how many of them go pretty far. Listen, we are overdue for a break. You are listening to News Talk 830. Keep it here. Oh, it is kind of a night for a brandy. I bet a lot of people have been probably consuming a lot of brandy over the last 3 weeks. You know, isn't Wisconsin the number one brandy state, or the number one brandy place in
America?
I think
it's just the number one alcohol state.
I think it really is for brandy.
I want to say there was one of these surveys that came out recently talking about the states that consume the most alcohol, and I think Wisconsin was on top.
Well, I do think, and I love Wisconsin. We're giving you the love, Wisconsin. Let me just look this up really quickly. I actually do think there's a brandy quotient for Wisconsin that's a little over the top. Wisconsin. Certainly, I do think, and I spent a lot of time in, Wisconsinites' love affair with brandy. It's rumored that our state is not only, this is on Milwaukee.com, a few websites, even before the Wisconsin's responsible for 90, wait a minute, this can't be right. This isn't a website, this is on Milwaukee.com articles. This claims that a few websites even reported that Wisconsin is responsible for 90% of the world's brandy consumption.
That can't be right. That can't be right.
I swear I've heard this. I've heard this statistic before. Not the world's, but 90, that's a lot of brandy consumption.
Okay. So let's say that Wisconsin drinks a lot of brandy.
Yes.
And let's say this area, known for its frigid winters at times.
Yes.
Is known to have people drink a lot of brandy. You also got Canada. They don't drink brandy in Canada?
Well, I think they've got their beer and...
Yeah, I know there's a Natty wine. Natty Ice and a Natty Light and all that good stuff
and a
Molson.
Yeah.
No, I would think that brandy would be just fine north of the border.
Right. Well, I think Canadians do it. I knew that I had heard that out there. And you do, like, as you drive around in these little towns, it's amazing to me how even the tiniest town in Wisconsin will have that establishment, the bar that you can go to. But that's Wisconsin. All right, folks. Have you ever wondered what it takes to get your pooch to a top dog show? I mean, I know a lot of us have our generic mutts, or we got we've got some purebred dogs, I think. But I don't know, maybe I need to do a DNA test, but I don't think they're going to any dog shows anytime soon. So we're going to talk to Dawn Droll. She's the vice president for the American Brittany Club, and she's going to talk to us in our next hour about what it takes to get into these dog shows with your dog. Keep it here. Coming up, we're also going to give you a little weather.